Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720. We're here to talk the next hour on Rush Street, the Street of Dreams. We've got quite a panel in with us tonight. We have David Floodstrand, who's organizing the Rush Street Reunion. This is an annual thing. Is it the second or third? Or
this is the second year
we've done it. Yeah. And we have Chicago's cabaret queen, good friend Denise Tomasello. You'll be performing at the reunion, right?
Yes, I will. Can't wait.
We have Marty Gotella, owner of Tavern on Rush. Our friend Steve Lombardo, thanks for coming in from a wedding, owner of Gibson Steakhouse. And last but certainly not least, my friend Jimmy Rittenberg. I think you helped pull some of this together. Great Cubs fan, former owner of Faces, featured in the Disco Demolition book. So thank you all for coming in on a Saturday night. I know Rush Street's probably dark right now for coming into the show. So, David, tell us what's going to happen at this event and how you got the idea for this.
Well, the event is going to be coming up at the Joint, 440 North State Street in Chicago, Sunday the 14th of August from 4 until 9 o'clock. And I started this last year as a way to I thought it would be a good idea to bring some people together because I've been doing this the research for this book project that I've been doing. I thought it'd be a great idea to get a whole bunch of people together and have it be like a party, you know, so I could do interviews and, you know, and that sort of thing. It got a lot more involved with the entertainment than I originally had anticipated. It just kind of like organically grew, you know. So we had jazz in one room with the Danny Long Trio, and then Milt Trenier came and sat in with them. They hadn't played together since 1962.
Was that last year?
It was last year.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, and then, you know, we had in the main room, we had like Ronnie Lass and the guy from the Shadows of Night.
Oh, Jimmy Sones.
Sang that, yeah, you know, right. Glory. We had the guy from Elliot Haynes and Jeremiah. He was singing stuff. It was just a wild, wild party. We had like 400 people. So I figured, you know, we try to do it again. You
know? I didn't even know the Joint. What's the address of the Joint? I didn't even know the Joint had moved. I was wandering around. I got down early today to see Southside Johnny.
Joint on State now, I guess. It's a 440 North State Street.
And was that the old? That wasn't the old Gentry, or was it really?
Was
it the old Gentry?
There.
Yeah, it was just I was wandering around. I go, well, here's where the Joint is now. So you're doing a book. It's called Rush Street, Street of Dreams.
Rush Street, Chicago, Street of Dreams is the working title.
And when did you start that? When will it be out? And what have you discovered?
Yeah, about 3 years ago. And I just keep on, it's like the layer of the onion skin. More great stories, more incredible personalities and history. And I figured it would be a good idea to get some of this stuff documented and, you know, chronicled, because so history is fading away. And it would be a shame to have it not be written down, you know, or remembered. Because it was so incredible. What an incredible street it was, and still is.
You were in Chicago. When in our conversations this week, I'm sure our paths must have crossed. You were in the electronic band, Eight and a Half. You played at Tuts in Park West.
Yeah.
Where I'm going with this. Then you moved to Florida.
Yeah, I did.
When did you move to Florida?
I moved to Florida around 95.
And then you came back.
Yeah, then I came back about 2012.
2012. Did you go down to Rush Street? How had it changed?
In the 2010.
Time in the time that you were gone, how had Rush Street changed?
It had changed quite a bit. It was a lot more slick buildings, many less buildings from the 1800s, and there was a lot of things that just weren't there anymore. And you know, so the vibe had changed as well, you know, so but it's just molded into something else now.
And our veteran Rush Street panelists, what happened? I mean, I was the Rush Street correspondent for the Sun-Times, and we always ended up talking about real estate and stuff. But why did it change? Why did the street change?
Well, I think Steve and Marty ruined it. It was phenomenal. We had jazz, blues, dancing, hookers. Yeah. We had everything. It was the Street of Dreams.
Yeah.
And these guys came in with the, you know, Gibson Steakhouse. Really nice, good people. Cleaned up the street. Ruined it. Just ruined it.
Uh-huh. Steve and Marty, how do you answer that?
Well, you know, that's
Steve.
We started with the BBC when we first came down here. And what happened in those days, every nightclub had a band. And we were searching for a sound system, and we went to Le Bistro, and they didn't have a band. They had turntables, and no one had that at that time. So that's so we started, that was the first disco on Rush Street.
About when was that?
1974.
And if that was happening in 74, I know we're going back, what was the live music scene like? I mean, I grew up in the Chicago suburbs. I remember coming down. Actually, I was coming down there about 76, 77.
You weren't allowed in any.
Yeah, I know. For some reason, I always remember the back room, people throwing up in the alley of the back room and stuff like that. Well,
I think Faces still had live music.
We had live music, yeah. They had the first DJ place. Aside from, I think, Dugan's Bistro over on... They had it. And there were some black clubs on the south side around 47th Street that had the DJs. But the BBC was the first place down there, and it took us about a month to copy it, you know. So, yes. Then we redid Faces. And it's just a different market between Division and Faces. So it still is between Rush Street and Division's a different market.
Faces ran 71 to 89.
Right,
roughly,
yeah.
Longer than Studio 54.
Well, Studio 54 was there from like 78 to 82. It only had about a three or four year run.
Right. Yeah,
it gets credit. It was a block from People magazine. So if Mick Jagger stopped into Studio 54, it was the cover of People. If he stopped in the Faces, it made Cups column.
Yeah.
So, you know, even though our places had just as many stars as they did, we even had the ones that couldn't go there, like Sinatra and Hope. They wouldn't go to Studio 54. So we had a lot of celebrities. But we were still Chicago. We weren't New York.
But you get on ahead with People magazine. We owned a place in Vegas called Jubilation. We had five heavyweight champs in there in one night, which is kind of, I mean, it's something. To me, it was really something. Well, we gave it to People magazine, you remember?
Yeah.
And that week, they ran in their entertainment, whatever part of the magazine was, it said, Suzanne Summers and her husband dancing the night away at Studio 54.
Uh-huh.
We had five heavyweight champs in one night when Ali fought Holmes at Caesars.
Yeah.
We were in Vegas. You know. Yeah.
Jubilation might have been the first disco in Vegas.
Yeah. Suzanne Summers and her husband.
No, we weren't.
One of.
What was the first nightclub in Vegas with disco? Remember Dirty Sally?
Dirty Sally's.
Yeah.
Dirty Sally.
I did his sound system.
Yeah.
Was there a connection? I mean, when people in Vegas, would they come to Chicago? Would they check you guys out and stuff? Networking?
We had been established in Chicago, two, 3 years. I think we opened in Vegas in 78. We opened the BBC in 74.
Yeah.
But getting back to Studio 54, a lot of people used to always ask us, did you guys copy Studio 54? I said, it was pretty difficult. We opened in 74. They opened in 78.
Yeah.
But... Like Jim hit it on the head, they had People magazine going for him and it became, and it was unique,
But David, you mentioned Jimmy Sons, there was a rock and roll scene down on Rush Street. I've talked to Chaka Khan before about Baby Huey and some of the black bands that played on Rush Street and stuff. Can you talk about what you remember about the live music scene there?
Oh, Baby Huey, probably the best rock and roll band in the history of the world.
Yeah, Baby Huey and the Babysitters.
Oh, yeah. They played down at Sitz Park, didn't they, and Barnaby's?
Yeah.
Where did they play? What room did they play in?
Well, the Thumbs Up was their big.
Well, that was up on Broadway.
Thumbs Up was the big spot that they played in.
Yeah.
But Sitz Park and Barnaby's on Rush Street.
But that's where Chicago came in. They were at Barnaby's, CTA.
Yeah.
That's where the manager, Jimmy Gershow, he found them there. They were playing there. And they were playing without a bass player, and there was some kid across the street at Sitz Park that was playing bass, and he said, do you guys want to come to L.A.? And I got a deal with Columbia to produce an album. They said, okay, we don't have a bass player. They went across the street, grabbed the bass player. That week they went out to L.A., and that was it.
Yeah.
What was that group, Sammy and the Fenders?
That was before
that one. No, they played right.
I kind of remember.
Same time.
Sammy and the Fenders. Sammy.
That's where the bass player came from, I think.
So then, when did music start fading away? Was it because of disco, or when did live music start going away?
I think when BBC went with the disco, and then we followed, and a bunch of other places. The problem was the bands were kind of pouring themselves out. They'd play one place and I played Faces, so I want to get $200 more. So it kind of got to where, I'm not saying price fixing or collusion, but we all got rid of the bands pretty much the same time, except for Mothers. They always kept the bands, and they had a longer they had a younger crowd. So, but we got rid of all at the same time.
A few places in the Rush Up, didn't they have bands in those
days? Rush Up, Rush Over, but they sort of ended about that time.
But what was that Henry Norton's joint? Remember that?
Oh yeah, the
Alfie's.
Alfie's. They didn't have it. They got rid of it.
Yeah,
they had jazz there for a while.
Did they?
Yeah.
You and I talked once about Rush Street being a little more dressier than State Street. I remember as a kid coming down here, I don't know if I ever wanted to turn the corner. What was the difference when you mentioned Mothers? Was it between Rush Street and Division Street? Did people go both ways, or was it just one of those?
I've always been a big believer in dress code determines your room. If you allow guys come in with T-shirts and blue jeans, you're going to have beer fights. If you got them in tuxedos, you're going to have Dompierre air fights and champagne flowing instead of the...
And the age difference was... There was an age difference.
But the division was more kind of post-grad, you know, Butch McGuire's and the Lodge.
Well, you did the Lodge, yeah.
Yeah, they were pretty much college.
You can still, today, you can see the difference between Division Street and Rush Street.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's probably the same as it was then.
Dress code and prices.
A bigger difference now than then.
Yeah.
So we got off track a little bit. What happened? Why did it change?
He blames the BBC.
Well, no, it was a good thing. I think it was economic for a long time. We were paying so much money to the bands, it was tough to make it. But you had to have your band 5 days a week, and that wasn't cheap. And people were resistant. Guys like you wouldn't pay a cover charge.
Yeah. Well,
the whole street. I'm talking about retail and shopping.
You know, Kelly's couldn't afford entertainment anymore, and you had all the Playboy Club left. The Playboy Club was a big loss to Rush Street. It was on Walton right around the corner. But that was a big deal. And that's probably what we missed most.
Yeah, it was a part of Rush Street as much.
Well, I remember in 1989 when we moved, it was because the real estate taxes tripled. And all your commercial leases are triple net. You pay the real estate taxes. And our rent was going to go from $5,000 a month to $15,000 a month. And I had already found 8,000 square feet over on Ontario Street where I did City Lights and Ditka's. And that was a... twice the space for half the price.
Yeah.
I don't know how you guys, they had a great lease at Sweetwater.
They had a great lease.
So what happened was everybody on Rush Street, everybody went out of business. The only light left on Rush Street was Gibson's. If you came out of Genie Giorgetti's after eating a steak, and you said, take me to Rush Street, they pull up right in front of Gibson's. And then they did, what a great product and a great corner. And they brought it back.
Yeah, they kept really brought it back for a long time.
Yeah. But I think Gibson's really brought it back. If Gibson's had closed, it'd have been gone.
Gibson's held it down. You're right. It was the only place.
It came back as a different street.
And a big thing too is we opened right when Mayor Daley was elected, and he put a big push on planting trees and that whole area, Oak Street, Rush Street, Michigan Avenue. He put a push on. Really making it nice for tourists.
And we're going to take a break here for some commercials. We're going to come back right away with our tribute to Rush Street on WGN 720. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on our tribute to Rush Street. That's you can get the smoke in the studio there with that Denise Tomasello. That's one of your tracks there, Denise. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here.
And you'll be singing at the reunion on the 14th?
Yes, I will.
And what will you cover?
Well, you know, I want to go back to my roots because you were talking about Mr. Kelly's and you were talking about all that. And I did attend Mr. Kelly's for my prom, and I saw the Letterman. And this really sparked my interest because I had never been to a showroom as a little girl. And, graduating high school, I went to Mr. Kelly's for my prom, and I thought, wow.
What high school was that?
Proviso East.
Okay.
And I was like, wow, this is where I want to sing. I want to sing downtown here. I want to be a part of the scene. By the time I got a little older, like you said, some of the live music had been phased out, and I got this opportunity to play at Sage's on State, which is right at the tail end of Rush Street. And this was a beautiful, elegant restaurant. It was owned by Gene Sage. He was a restaurateur in Chicago. And he had a place called Eugene's and a place called Sage's. And Sage's was a beautiful, red, intimate, gorgeous room. And I turned it into my little cabaret room. So I turned it into kind of like a theater cabaret. It was just piano, because you said the overhead, having bands and trios. So there I was. I was in my early 20s. And I had this, I walked in, got this great opportunity for this audition, and they said, okay, we're going to give you a 2-week contract. And I said, wow, this is so exciting. I'm finally down here. And it turned into a 6-year engagement, and I was there 5 nights a week. And it was so fun because Harry Carey would come in every night, and his wife, and Irv and Essie Cupsonit would come in every night.
Was Irv awake?
Sometimes. And Jack Brickhouse and Pat. They would come in. All the VIPs from Chicago would come in. Plus, the Pump Room and the Ambassador East Hotel was kitty corner from our building because we were in the Churchill Hotel. So everybody, movie stars, Elizabeth Taylor, Dean Martin, who was my huge idol when I was a kid. My mom always played his records more than Sinatra. So I had a crush on Dean Martin. And he came in one night, and it was just a great room. I couldn't believe it. I didn't even know where I had landed. And I had landed probably one of the most intimate, lovely rooms in Chicago. I had a wonderful career, and I met everyone. And I worked with my musical director, Russ Long. We worked there for 6 years, and we got off at 1 o'clock in the morning. Okay, nowadays, that would be late. That was nothing. Okay, then we would either go over to Acorn on Oak to hear Buddy Charles, right?
Yeah.
Or we would go to Blondie's and hear a lot of different acts, which was originally Punchinello's. And we would go downstairs and we would hear all these different players, and Johnny Frigo would come in with his violin, and everyone would come in. This was still a musician's town. Everybody went out after their gig. So we all stayed out till 3:30 in the morning during Tuesday through Friday. And on Saturday, we stayed out till, I worked till 2. So then we went to the other clubs and we stayed out till 4:30. Then after 4:30, the night was still not over. We walked across the street over to the oak tree. Remember the redheaded
Frankie, right?
Yeah. She was if you didn't know Frankie and you weren't on her good side, you didn't get the best booth in there. And all of our pictures were up on the wall along with all the other celebrities. And so we would all sit in the booths and we'd all like hang out together, and everybody would say, how was your gig tonight? How was your gig tonight? Oh, I'm going to try to go see this person. I'm going to try to see that person. Who came in by you? Oh, who was over by you? And then at the end, it'd probably be like 5:30, maybe 6 o'clock in the morning. They're nodding because they know. And 6 o'clock in the morning, we'd start to go home. And if we were lucky, we'd get to bed by 6:30, 7, and sleep.
About what year was this? What year?
I started in the end of 79.
Okay.
And right. So it went into the mid-80s for me.
I mean, we're going to have to take a break here for the news, but I mean, people don't realize, I mean, we're talking about, I mean, when did women bartenders start showing up on Rush Street? When did that happen? That was in really recent times, what, 20, 30 years ago?
Really recent.
Yeah.
We didn't have any faces in town.
Gibson's and Carmine's were really the first.
Well, Sweetwater had the daytime bartender.
Yeah.
Sweetwater
had one of the day.
Well, and when was that? When was that?
Jay had a couple of J's.
That was the around 80.
Yeah.
Yeah. 80s. No female bartenders until the 80s.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Yeah. I think Jay Emmerich, he had a couple of girls. Jay was my partner. He's the one that taught me.
I only go to bars with female bartenders.
he had that little J's on the corner.
All Jay was the bartender.
It's hard to find one now.
Because I want to talk to you about that after the break. I want to talk about what it was like to get work and stuff, some of the challenges for you too, Denise. But we're going to come back with some live music, so don't go away with our tribute to Rush Street on Nocturnal Journal. Thank you.
try to think love's not around. Though it's uncomfortably near, my old heart ain't gaining no ground, 'cause my angel eyes ain't here. Angel eyes that old devil sent, they glow unbearably bright. Need I say my love's been misspent? Misspent angel eyes tonight. So drink up, all you people, order anything that you see. Have fun, all you happy people. The drink and the laughs on me. Pardon me, I've got to run. The fact's uncommonly clear. I've got to find out who is number one and why my angel eyes ain't here. Drink up, all you lovely people. Order anything that you see. Have fun, all you happy people. The drink and the laughs on me. Pardon me, but I've got to run. The fact's uncomfortably clear. I've got to find out who is number one and why my angel eyes ain't here. Excuse me while I disappear. Thank you.
Very good.
Very good. Great.
Vince Willis on piano.
Vince Willis, thank you. Musical stylings of Mr. David Floodstrand, who's organizing the Rush Street Reunion from 4 to 9 p.m. August 14th at the Joint, 440 North State. Joining us, thank you all for coming in tonight on our panel on Rush Street, is Chicago cabaret queen Denise Tomasello, our good friend, former, I just call impresario, manager. What were you at Faces, Jim Rittenberg?
General manager.
General manager of Faces. Thank you so much, Steve Lombardo, the owner of Gibson's, for coming in tonight, and Marty Gatella, owner of Tavern on Rush, across the street from Gibson's. You know, I've got some questions here, but also listening to you guys talk and listening to that song and listening to Denise talk about Dean Martin, can we just talk a little bit about style and the style, maybe a bygone style of just the way the street was, the way people dressed, the way people, men conducted themselves, and just what style meant to Rush Street?
Well, since I'm the one that probably the oldest down here as far as being around Rush Street, not yeah. oldest in years, but... You know, I was down there when I was like 16. Jay Emmerich, who was my mentor and the guy that invented Faces, actually lived down there as a kid. He was a lifeguard at Oak Street Beach, and he lived down there. So I latched onto him pretty early on and played softball and learned a lot about the business from him. But we used to go to Butch McGuire's and pay 35 cents for a beer. And then you go to Rush Street and be like 50, 60 cents a beer. It was outrageous. Uh-huh. Now look what they've done. But, you know, you could go to the Velvet Swing and see Satchmo. You could go to Mr. Kelly's and see some the old Gator Horn that Henry Norton bought after a while, which became the store. The Gator Horn was closed because Lenny Bruce said the word F from the stage.
1962.
And then Bob and Jack Rasmussen brothers and Andy Doe bought it. And they opened up the store, which brought the college crowd, the post-college crowd, down to State Street, not Rush Street. There was a big difference between State Street and Rush Street. Never the twain should meet. You know, yeah. The boys were very influential on Rush Street in those days. And you didn't open up on Rush Street unless you pretty much had permission.
Yeah.
And Jay, because he was a kid down there, everybody knew him, he could do anything he wanted.
So. I want to go around the panel for everybody. We'll start with you, Jim, because I know you grew up in West Garfield Park. When was the first time you went down there? What are your memories? Your very first, this will be for everybody, one by one, virgin visit to Rush
Street.
Well,
I'm not going to count my junior prom when I didn't know what the hell was going on. But I would say after playing softball against Butch McGuire's or one of them, I started hanging around down there. And probably 1967 or 68. I tended bar in Old Town.
Yeah.
But I didn't hang there all the time. I was an inner city teacher. I was into civil rights and all that stuff then, so Old Town was good for me. But all the girls were on Rush Street, Division Street. So we wound up over there every night. And I remember Figaro's. I was trying to think of the name of it. Figaro's. He used to play Mose Allison on the jukebox. And I just pretty much ran the street as a kid, 16, 17-year-old, thinking I was 21.
Steve Lombardo, same question.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much the same thing. When we were like seniors in high school and you know, kids in college, everyone had phony IDs. We'd all come down here, and we go to the Orange Tree, and boy, what are some of the other places? I can't
Dino's?
Remember. Yeah, Dino's, the Orange Tree.
Easy Street,
and, yeah,
Catfish.
Because this is where the girls were. And then when Playboy opened, that was what year did Playboy open?
60?
Yeah, I say so. Playboy. When we found out about the Playboy Club, then that was a big deal. We all got a membership was like $25.
All the airline stewardesses had to live downtown then, right. Because they didn't have all those places out in Schiller Park. They all took the shuttle out to the airport.
Yeah.
So Butch McGuire was the one we were talking about it.
Yeah, Butch. His wife was a flight attendant, I believe, and she kind of.
But he broke the mold. He said he would make us. You got to get up and let the girls.
Yeah, he told me that.
It was unheard of. Yeah, unheard of.
Yeah, that was really a big thing he did. It really put him on the map. Yep. Elaborate on that story.
Butch was the first guy who said that the seats at the bar are reserved for the ladies. Before then, if a lady sat at the bar on Rush Street, it gave a bad connotation. Guys, in fact, some of the places said you can't sit at the bar because they thought they were hookers. But Butch was the first one because he has the airline stewardesses and secretaries, and he had all guys working there. No women worked at Butch's. But he hired pre-law, pre-dental guys, so the girls were attracted to the guys. And if you came in and sat down, he'd tell you to get up, and there you walk into Butch's, there'd be 20 girls sitting at the bar every night.
Right.
So how did he's still there 60 years later.
Yeah. Steve and Marty, I mean, same question for Marty, but we've talked about the live music, but what was the food like down there in the early days and stuff? I know there were hamburger joints
that
don't.
Attention to
yeah, right. Yeah,
what is significant? There were a couple of restaurants. There's Sage's was one, right?
Sage's.
There was
East.
A couple of good
right.
restaurants.
Sage's
there,
East.
But it wasn't really a significant part of the
free chicken at the filling station on Saturday afternoons.
And there was
Panarans had cheeseburgers. I mean, it wasn't a food.
Oh, Franksville. There was the hot dog stand.
Adolph's
had good food.
Augustino's.
Adolph's and the Italian place.
Augustino's.
But that was the Rush Street side. That wasn't the Post College side.
Well, you're talking about State Street, Jim. That was two blocks long. What you're talking about, a block long, you know.
But Adolph's was probably the best spot for food down there. And it stayed open all the time, and after it closed, it would stay open, so you could be there till 6 o'clock in the morning.
Did you know? You wanted to get into this? I mean, Did you have something like Gibson's in the back of your mind as you were coming up, or how did that happen? I've never really talked to you about that.
How did it happen?
Yeah,
self defense probably. Rush Street took a major dip in the 80s. And we had the location, and we had to do something. So we opened a restaurant.
And we were talking the last act at Mr. Kelly's was
Gino Vannelli. Yeah.
Were you there?
No, to see him. No.
No, it was Gino Vannelli. Was the last.
But we called him to tell him that he was the last act.
Yeah, right.
What did he say?
Tell him how we got Sweetwater.
Well, actually, I was coming off. I was coming to the BBC.
We were partners.
Yeah,
we were partners at BBC and Sweetwater, coming off in Ontario, and the bridge was up. I don't think I've ever seen it up since then. And the kid in front of me just hit a clutch and he kept backing up. And finally, he just banged into my car. Got out of the car. He looked like Bozo. You know, he had hair like out. You know, really. And he said, "Please don't call the police. I have a horrible driving record." He was about 16, 17 years old. I wasn't a hell of a lot older at that time myself, but he said, "My dad owns Mr. Kelly's. I promise you he'll fix your car." But showed me his license. It was some Lakeshore Drive address. And I said, okay, I thought we could wound up calling his dad, you know, to get my car fixed. And we got a conversation. I talked to Steve about it, and we bought it. We bought, you know, Mr. Kelly's from,
his
name.
His last name.
Yeah, whatever his name was.
I never heard that story.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know. And so, I've never seen the bridge up since. I mean, I swear to God. So there was, really, there, it, do you ever see it up on Ontario Street? You're driving.
No, yeah, right. So it went Mr. Kelly.
He had a clutch and he kept rolling back and rolling back and he finally banged into my car. And that's how we bought Sweetwater.
Good example not to have road rage.
Yeah. So it went Mr. Kelly's, Sweetwater, Gibson's, kind of like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then David, you were trying to do live music at Sweetwater, is that right?
Yeah, actually, I brought the first live music back to Sweetwater from after it was Mr. Kelly's. We had a Friday afternoon New Orleans style buffet, and the manager was looking for strolling Dixieland musicians, and it worked out so well for that Friday buffet that I was able to get my own group in there either on a Monday or a Thursday or something like that with some really great players that I was lucky to be playing with.
Denise, I promised I'd get back to you on this. What was it like to find work down there as a female singer?
I happened to luck out because an agent saw me. He was actually Bill Cosby's agent. I was singing at a place in Arlington Heights it was the Arlington Park Hilton. And at the top of the tower, they had the Arlington Park, I think it was called the TAC. No, I was in the TAC room, and it was the top of the towers. The top of the towers. And the agent came down. He saw me down there, and he said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "Oh, it's just 15 minutes from where I live." And he said, "You should be downtown." And I said, "Oh, I don't want to drive downtown." So I actually, it just kind of happened. And he said, "I'm going to make a phone call tomorrow," because he booked a lot of big celebrities, and the woman, Norma Gimbel, and Joy Dickens booked the room. And he said, "I know this Norma Gimbel, and you should be at Sage's." And I said, "I don't even know what that is." I was, you know, very young and naive. And he said, "I'm going to have you have an audition for you." And I said, "Okay." And they called me on. He said to me, "I'll come back and see you tomorrow night. I'm going to bring the lady." And he never came. So I thought, just like what you're thinking, you know, like the casting couch and all that. And I thought, oh, you know, he was just kidding. And the next morning I got a phone call and they said, would you come down and audition? And I said, well, sure. And they said, go on cold, no rehearsal. I didn't have my own piano player. They just said, walk in with some music. And I did it, and she shook my hand, and she said, oh, I love you. You're perfect for the room. Check it, he was right. And she said, I want to have you here for 2 weeks. So that turned into my six-year engagement, so which made it really easy. But it did fit. It was like a perfect marriage. Like what I was doing and what the room was doing was perfect. You mentioned dress code. All the men had to wear a suit coat. I don't care who you were. If you did not have a suit coat on, you could be Frank Sinatra. You could be anybody. They had a blue or a brown or a suit coat in the closet. And if you came in without a sport coat on, you had to put that sport coat on in order to get into the room. It was very strict.
Yeah. That's what. Who wrote the song about the pump room?
Oh, Phil Collins. Phil Collins. Phil Collins. Yeah. No jacket required.
Oh, no. Right. Yeah, something
like that. They kicked Woody Allen out one night. Yeah. Woody Allen came in with jeans and he would love him.
We're going to take a break here for some spots, and we'll be back with our esteemed panel on Rush Street after this, so don't go away.
April in Paris, chestnuts in blossom, holiday tables under the trees. April in Paris, this is a feeling no one could ever reprise. I never knew the chance of spring. I never met them face to face. I never knew my heart could sing. Never missed a warm embrace till April in Paris. Whom can I run to? What have you done to my heart? Cha-cha-cha.
Thank you. That's my Mr. Vince Willis on piano.
Thank you, David Floodstrand. Thank you, Vince Willis, for coming all the way in from Naperville tonight.
That's a
long drive. So thanks for joining us on piano. Before we wrap this up, I wanted to talk about the personal touch all you guys do at your places. When I did my book on supper clubs, I actually talked to Hefner, and he said, yeah, the Playboy Club was a supper club. And, you know, I mean, but one thing about a supper club, whether it's a Midwest supper club or an urban supper club, is a personal touch, getting to know your customers, who your customers are. And I know Jim does that. I've read that Steve does that. Tell me about how important it is to just recognize the customer.
Well, I mean, it's all, whether it's a nightclub business, the bar business, restaurant business, it's the hospitality business. That's the real business. And because the other, it's all the same. And it's all relationships. It's all people. You know, and if you don't know them, if you don't care about them, why would they go there?
And you treat everybody. I mean, one time I did go to Gibson's. I was walking in right behind Dennis Rodman. Mm-hmm. Dennis Rodman would get treated the same way I would. Mayor Daley, Mayor Daley hung out there, and
there are priorities. But but you know, we really do. We really, that's the whole culture. We try to train our people to make. You want to make somebody regular. That's what you want to do.
Yes.
So if you don't know them, you want to get to know them. You want to make them regular. You want them to come back.
Marty.
That's about. I mean, he used to, every time you walked into Faces, he was on that mic saying something about you and talking about you.
Rittenberg,
yeah. He was the best at it.
People love to hear their name more than anything else, Dave. You know that, Dave? It's pretty true.
You're right, yeah.
You're right.
Same question, Marty, just about your outreach to your clientele.
Well, actually, I was one of them before I became, you know, before I got older and had to have a different relationship. But I worked more in the field than these two guys did. I mean, I was in there drinking with them and partying with them. Yeah. Steve was the guy that did all the, you know, numbers.
You know. Marty is actually a bad influence on me.
So, no, really, I was one of them before I had to start hosting them. So I knew what they wanted, you know.
Is there anything left before we wrap it up? I mean, September 2012, I did a story for the paper on when the back room closed and Jilly's that space went under. I'm a big Springsteen fan. I remember somebody's asking with Steve Van Zandt where he goes when he comes to Chicago. I don't know where to go now that Jilly's is closed and stuff. What's left besides Gibson's Tavern on Rush? What else is left?
Yeah, there's Lux Bar, which Steve owns also.
Never been in there. What's that about?
It's it's really more of a local bar than, and it doesn't caters more to the locals than to tourists. You know?
Lux Bar.
Yeah.
Okay. And what's the address there?
It's right across the street, next door to the tavern.
It's right next door to the tavern.
But there's a lot of new bars and there's new areas. There's River West. There's
Hubbard Street.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of other areas. And there's a whole, we've been around a long time. There's a whole new group of guys coming up with bars that are, and kids. Rich Melman's two sons, they've got some hot bars. Paris Club is, so.
Do people come up in the business for all three of you? Do they ask you questions? Do you mentor anybody?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a whole line of guys who've worked for me and probably for Steve and Marty and for Richie Melman, for sure, that are out there, have their own restaurants, their own bars, their own clubs. Absolutely. In fact, we create our own competition. Mm-hmm. If you do a good job of training and somebody's really a superstar, they're not going to work for you too much longer. They're going to go out and do their own thing. And that's, look at Hubbard Street. Kathy Fitzpatrick at Mother Hubbard's came from here. Ahmed over at the Boss Bar came from Faces. You guys probably got
Kenny and Cal, the guys that started Crowbar. Yeah, they went national with it.
All over the place.
And John Ponarelli at the Chop House. These are famous restaurants.
Tino.
You're right.
Mm-hmm. Can you teach style though? I keep thinking about that style. I don't know.
You can teach a dancer to wait tables. You can't teach a waitress to dance. So a person has to have that live body and they have to like people. If they don't like people, they don't have that live body, then the answer is don't waste your time with them.
Yeah.
You got to have somebody and you can meet them. It's like teaching school. You can tell in 10 minutes whether a kid's outgoing or not outgoing. And it's a hard thing to fake. Some can do it, but.
Okay, David, give us the skinny on the Rush Street reunion again. 4 to 9 p.m., August 14th.
It's
at the joint.
The joint over on State Street.
440 North State. I walked by it tonight. I asked about Stanley I walked by there.
From 4 to 9.
Yeah. Okay, 4 to 9. Yeah, How much is it? Is there a website?
There's a website. It's rushstreetreunion.com. And if you go there, the tickets now are $30. And with that, if you order online, you can get to our exclusive after-hours party at the London House Rooftop Bar.
Wow.
But you have to have a ticket. You got to buy online.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you guys all for coming in. David Fledgetown, my friend Denise Tomaselli, you didn't sit on my lap. Jimmy Rittenberg, Marty Gatella, and Steve Lombardo. Thank you all, and may Rush Street live on forever. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.